Darling, willkommen in meinem neuen magischen Geschenkuniversum mit legendären Kleinigkeiten, Kostbarkeiten und Schätzen. Von traumhaften Überraschungen bis zu himmlischen Geschenken. Es ist für all die Stars in deinem Leben etwas dabei. Lass zu Weihnachten deine Beauty-Wünsche wahr werden mit Charlotte Tilbury.
Stu does America.
Follow the show on YouTube, youtube.com/StuDoesAmerica. Follow the channel, subscribe, hit the bell for notifications, drop 18 comments below, all of them in French. Our Jasmine Crockett merch is also live now on StuDoesMerch.com. Use the code STU10, get 10% off your order. We have Chris Bedford, who's going to be here with the latest on the fight to pass and the big, beautiful bill situation that's going on today. There's a lot of news in that realm. It's a great day to be former Mets star Bobby Bonilla. I'll tell you why. But we start by doing Mom Donnie's grocery store faceplant. And I wish, honestly, this was actually just a story about him walking through a grocery store and falling flat on his face in real life, and it was caught on video. That would be better. I mean, if you have AI and you're playing with it, that might be a good thing for you to do, and you can just post it in the comments or on Twitter or something. But this is actually more about his policy stuff, and it is a lot of fun. Let me take you back to the mayoral election, right? We're going into this election. Andrew Cuomo, but who, by the way, is awful. I don't know if you know this. Andrew Cuomo is awful.com. Go there, get your mugs. That's there as well. He was supposed to be the last firewall between socialism and New York City. And he was running because he had to stop it. I mean, he's so business friendly, you have to understand. Business friendly, he's usually grabbing somebody's business. But he's up in your business. I'll say that. And he is a very business friendly guy. And he's not a socialist at all. Not like that at all. He's just very, very corrupt. So some businesses benefit from him because he gives away things to his friends. That being said, it was really important. Everyone was saying how important it was that he stops this socialist. Of course, he doesn't really seem to try very hard. He didn't seem to put a lot of effort into the campaign, frankly. And then he, even though he had a lot of money, and then winds up losing. Now, what can you do after you lose this primary? Well, you can sit back and you say, well, I was the last firewall before, this socialist taking over. And, the future of New York. And so I better get out of this race, right? Like that way, maybe Adams has a chance or maybe Curtis Sliwa has a chance. I don't know if he'd want that even more, frankly, than Mom Donnie, but probably he'd want Adams more. At least that's what we've been told. But he could have just taken his name off the ballot. The way New York works, kind of a weird system. But he basically created a third party line for himself for exactly this situation, where he would be able, if I lost, I can still run in the general. So he had a chance to take himself off of the ballot that would maybe coalesce the anti-Mom Donnie vote into another candidate. Instead of having three possibilities, there'd be two, or instead of four, there'd be three, depending on how you look at it. Anyway, long story short, obviously, because Andrew Cuomo is Andrew Cuomo, he didn't do that. Cuomo did not quit before the New York City race deadline, so his name will be on the ballot, siphoning off votes from anybody that isn't Mom Donnie. So who knows? It's very possible he winds up actually trying to run and win this race. I think if polling shows him it's possible, he will do everything he can to stay in because, you know, he's awful in every single way. Now, who is Mom Donnie? Well, he says he's a democratic socialist. You could argue he's a communist. In fact, that case was made pretty convincingly in justthenews.com by Jerry Dunleavy. The piece is called Mom Donnie and Fact Checkers Deny He's a Communist, but his own words say otherwise. There's a lot in here. It's really thorough. I encourage you to go get that story and read it in its entirety. Maybe we'll go through it with him in an interview or something. Maybe either later this week or next week. I think it's worth going through. But let me just give you a couple of examples. Here is Zohran Mamdani. This is back in, I think it's 2020, talking about the end goal of his policies.
What the purpose is about this entire project, it's not simply to raise class consciousness, but to win socialism. And obviously raising class consciousness is a critical part of that. But making sure that we have candidates that both understand that and are willing to put that forward at every which moment that they have, at every which opportunity that they're given. We have to continue to elect more socialists, and we have to ensure that we are unapologetic about our socialism. There are also other issues that we firmly believe in. whether it's BDS, right, or whether it's the end goal of seizing the means of production, where we do not have the same level of support at this very moment. And what I want to say is that it is critical that in the way that we organize, in the way that we set up our, you know, set up our work and our priorities, that we do not leave any one issue for the other, that we do not meet a moment and only look at what people are ready for, but that we are doing both of these things in tandem.
I mean, if you could go into a lab and create a clip that should sink a candidate at any level in the United States, that might be it. We need to elect more socialists. And by the way, we're not going to say necessarily of all the crazy stuff like seizing the means of production, which obviously you could theoretically try to reword to make it a little bit more friendly rather than using the actual Marxian phrasing. But whatever, he doesn't care. So he's using the Marxist phrasing throughout. And then he basically says, we're going to keep doing it even when we don't tell people about it. But okay, I suppose it's shocking that the United States, anywhere in the United States, would even consider a man who said this, seemingly from space, by the way. He was on another planet when he said that, which is maybe the most shocking part of that. How do you seize the means of production? Well, let me give you at least a minor league example of that, something that is just absolutely core to socialism and communism and has led to so many wonderful things in the past. Taking over grocery stores. Watch.
Grocery prices are out of control. The cost of eggs and milk has skyrocketed. Some stores are even using dynamic pricing, jacking up the cost over the course of a day, depending on what they can get away with. It doesn't need to be this way. I'm Zahran Mamdani, and as mayor, I will create a network of city-owned grocery stores. It's like a public option for produce. We will redirect city funds from corporate supermarkets to city-owned grocery stores, whose mission is lower prices, not price gouging. These stores will operate without a profit motive or having to pay property taxes or rent, and will pass on those savings to you.
There's so much here. First of all, if they want to have dynamic pricing in their stupid grocery stores, then they should be able to do that. I would say that's not necessarily a good idea. I don't think it's particularly common. But if they did it, you'd probably be like, what the hell? This was $2 cheaper yesterday and now it's more and I'm not going to come back to the store. I don't like it. It's probably what happens. It's probably why most stores don't do it, right? If it was so easy to do and everyone was going to get away with it, they'd probably just do it. Taking over grocery stores is obviously bonkers, right? And I want you to just focus on a couple things here. Number one, that every time it's done leads to terrible outcomes. It's a bad idea. Obviously, anyone can picture the you know, empty Venezuelan store shelves if you want a picture of what that eventually looks like if you go far enough with it. Now you open up one store, a couple stores in a giant city like New York, it's probably not going to mean that they don't have any food there. But it's a completely ridiculous thing and something that government should not be involved in. If you think your town is not doing something like this, it's probably actually, you're probably wishing for something that you don't have. And I will say, and those who have watched this show long enough might be able to predict this next rant, but let me give it to you anyway. Taking over what should be a private business, creating a public option that undercuts the cost of other businesses in town. This is your local rec center, if you have one. This is, you know, if you have a local rec center that was run by the town and has a gym inside and everyone, you know, goes and joins up for the gym. I know we have one in our town and I know what happened in our town. I, as a taxpayer, paid a lot of money for them to spend millions of dollars on this ridiculous rec center, which is quite nice. I will admit, in fact, it's nicer than most of the other gyms in the area. And what they do is then they take the membership costs and they make it a little bit lower than all the other actual businesses that invested all of their own money to open up in town. So now we have gyms who open up their business in town and have to compete with a government option that is undercutting them on cost while charging them taxes. So they're getting their money to fund a gym that then they undercut the cost of the private person who actually bought the gym. It's the same concept here. It's more offensive maybe when it comes to food, but I don't know why. We really as conservatives should be against all of these examples. especially when it's completely unfair to a business person who comes into a town and says, hey, I want to open up something here. What winds up happening oftentimes is they open up these rec centers and the gyms close down. You would see the same thing happen in New York City, because probably what they would do is undercut the cost of everything. Remember, they don't have a profit motive. Now, long term, we know how that works out. It's not good. It does not work very well, but it does destroy businesses and people's lives. So that's a whole different side situation. And of course, when you don't need to be profitable, when you get all sorts of benefits, when you lose money as a grocery store, but get to remain open over and over and over again because no one cares if you don't have the money, you just continue to raise taxes and scam money off of other parts of government. That's very, very easy. It's about as close to communism as you can get when you're here in the United States. So the one thing you'd say about that, though, is they put some effort into the video, right? He's out, he's walking around the grocery stores. They did a little shoot. He's got the little microphone. They have animations for every little part of the plan, how they're going to do it. They're going to take the funding from here. They're going to push it over here. They put some thought into this. Or at least you'd think they would, because I don't know if you're like me, you have this vision of people sitting around like a bunch of nerds and they're all sitting around thinking like, gosh, what would the policy be? How would we design it? We got to get this all built out. We got to make sure all the numbers add up, all the columns line up. That's not how this is done, especially with people like Mamdani, who's, basically a nobody loser up until 2 weeks ago. Mamdani's government grocery store plan is based on an accounting error. This is a piece from the Washington Examiner. Let me walk you through it and then give you a couple of observations, because I've got many on this particular issue. The claim is based on a basic misunderstanding of the city's current grocery subsidies. The money he plans to use to pay for his city-owned grocery stores is money the city doesn't have. Specifically, he wrongly believes that the city is spending $140 million to subsidize private grocery stores, and he thinks he could take half of that money and then use it to build government groceries. Now, of course, if that's what's happening, right, like the government is taking $140 million, they're dishing it out to, Stop and Shop and Kroger and, whatever, Albertsons, wherever you are in the country. They're giving it to those companies, so they open up grocery stores in town. Now, you'd think grocery purveyors would have some interest in serving the nation's financial center and largest city. So they probably don't really need to be encouraged to go there. And of course, other than something we see for businesses all the time, tax breaks, there's really nothing going on here. According to Mamdani, his five grocery stores would cost $60 million. That should be compared to the city's existing program called City Fresh. This is Mamdani speaking, where they are set to spend $140 million subsidizing corporate grocery stores. So we would take less than half of the money the city is already sent to spend and deliver actual results, he said. Okay, so this is a real program. He did bother going on the web and finding a real program that does something kind of similar to this. It is called Fresh Food Retail Expansion to Support Health. This is one of these BS programs that popped up a while ago when the food desert thing was hot. Like, oh, there's not enough grocery stores. Now, I don't know if you've ever been to New York City. There's grocery stores everywhere. Some of them are smaller. Some of them are like bodegas. They have fresh fruit and vegetables. They have all sorts of different things. There's plenty of food to be found in New York City. It's ridiculous to say this. And I know this for a fact, by the way, because we used to do a segment on The Wonderful World of Stew, the last show I did here on Blaze TV. And it was called Deserted. And we would go to areas that were designated as food deserts and visit all the grocery stores in the food deserts that they said didn't exist. Every single time we found a food desert, there was a grocery store there that was just not listed. So it was, it's a BS idea in the first place. The Food Retail Expansion to Support Health program is a bundle of tax breaks and special regulatory relief for grocery stores that open in so-called food deserts, poor neighborhoods where the city has concluded residents don't have adequate access to produce and other healthy foods. A lot of times it's like they only have one grocery store or they only have two grocery stores, but they don't have eight grocery stores. So we need give tax breaks. So these are tax incentives. You see them all the time. Lower tax rates, delayed. It's a lot of times like deductions that can be taken or tax rates that have already built in the law lower rates and they are extended for a period of time. So instead of getting a 2-year break for a new business, you get a 5-year break for a new business, stuff like that. Now, all in all, the city has given up about $30 million in tax revenue through this program. In the last 6 years, since Fresh got into full swing, the program has reduced revenue by about $20 million total, according to the city's estimates. That is, it costs an average of $3.3 million per year, There's an asterisk on that one. So this program would take 42 years to cost the city $140 million, what that mom Donnie said the city is set to spend on it. So let me break this down a little bit here in case it's a little bit difficult to follow, because I think it is. They don't have $140 million. They're not spending $140 million on anything, okay? The government is getting about $3 million per year less in tax revenue because of tax breaks. They're not spending anything on this program. I refuse to accept the idea that that's even spending. But even if you do, if you're one of the weird people out there that say, hey, I'm going to take less of your money, that therefore we're spending money, like, doesn't make any sense at all. It's not your money. It's the company's money or the individual's money. But even if you believe all money is government money, and therefore the money they do not collect from you is money they spent, even that, it would be 42 years of spending to get this $140 million number. So he specifically cites it. He tells you what the program is. Where does he get this idea that there's $140 million just sitting around being spent that he can take half of to spend on his dumb grocery stores? Well, I mean, honestly, the obvious thing is he's a moron. Okay, let me explain to you how dumb he is. Where does Mom Donnie you get that $140 million number? Quote, he misread the city's webpage. Yes, let me show you the webpage we're talking about. Here it is. This is, yes, the Fresh website. And the Fresh website has a bunch of text in small letters there, small font. I don't know, maybe 10, 12 font. Not a lot of big letters. It's hard to read in there. You're not going to bother with that. What Mom Donnie did is he skipped all of that, and he skipped the actual text, and he skipped the actual budget charts and all the things that could have told him that they don't actually have $140 million to spend, and instead looked at that bright yellow box in the middle of the webpage. There it is, 140M, the amount of money invested into NYC's economy through Fresh. Now, what he thought that meant, and this is how stupid he is, and how stupid New York City voters are, at least on the Democratic side, to take a person who's done this little work and put him in the Democratic nomination. The box says $140 million, the amount of money invested into NYC's economy through Fresh. That does not mean, number one, that the government spent $140 million or plans to spend another $140 million on grocery stores. It also does not mean that they've taken in $140 million in less taxes, which somehow is counted as spending in some weird circles. It doesn't mean that they've done that either. What that number is the amount of money that private grocery stores have invested in New York because of, they say, the tax incentives we've offered them. So they wouldn't have built that grocery store, but we gave them a $500,000 tax break, so they built the grocery store, right? That's how that works. So they're bragging about all the money that came in from Safeway and Whole Foods and all the others to come into the city to put the grocery store there. They're just bragging about it. They're like, it's like when someone builds a stadium, like, this is going to cost, this gave us $10 billion in new economic development because we built this stadium. All right, whatever. They're just saying, hey, they wouldn't have done this without us. We're taking credit for all of it. That $140 million number is absolutely nothing. He just doesn't know what he's talking about at all. Can you believe this? This is a central plank of this idiot's campaign. It was on television all the time. And that's the mistake he made. He just read the bright yellow box on the website. Incredible. The city's Economic Development Corporation estimates that grocery stores have invested $140 million of their own money thanks to the Fresh program. Mom Donnie is counting the $140 million in private spending as government spending. Could there be a worse mistake than that? He has absolutely no idea what he's talking about in one of the central planks of his campaign. That money was invested not by the city, but by corporate grocery stores. The really socialist way to read this is that Mom Donnie believes that money invested by private grocery stores is his to spend, which may very well be true. The more likely explanation is that Mom Donnie misunderstands the government website and thus is planning to pay for his grocery stores with money that does not exist. So that's the story. That's how bad the mistake is. Now, let me give you something to make it much worse. The person who wrote this is a former guest on this program. He came on to talk about his book last year, Timothy P. Carney. He is a senior political columnist at the Washington Examiner, senior fellow at the American Enterprise Institute. The book, by the way, that he was on about was a good book, Family Unfriendly, How Our Culture Made Raising Kids Much Harder Than It Needs to Be. He's had a couple of great books, and he's a good writer, but a conservative writer. A guy who works for the Washington Examiner. Now, think really hard. Can you think of any publications that don't have Washington in the title, but instead have New York in the title? Maybe a publication that constantly was covering the New York City Democratic mayoral primary. In fact, there's a bunch of them, but let me single out the New York Times. How on earth does it fall to Tim Carney of the Washington Examiner to take the first look at one of the central policies of the guy who won the Democratic primary? Why is he the first person who thought to say, what is he talking about, $140 million? That's not true at all. Why didn't the New York Times bother to check on this at all? Why is Tim Carney the one stuck doing this? I'm glad he did. Thank you so much for doing so. How was there not a single New York Times reporter who bothered to look into this, even at its most basic level? I don't know if any of this makes any sense or any worry for the people of New York City. You know, and part of this might just be that nobody cared about Mamdani up until about 3 or 4 weeks ago because he's a giant zilch that's never accomplished anything in his entire life. And just the fact that a really awful candidate was his opponent gives him the possibility to actually get through that. But like, and speaking of Andrew Cuomo being awful, okay, yeah, the New York Times, how did they not catch this? How did the Cuomo campaign not figure this out? They didn't even bother to look at any of his proposals? It is absolutely fascinating. I suppose the end of the story here is, before we go to break, that when you're Andrew Cuomo and you've constantly molested and killed the grandparents of your constituents, it's really hard to win no matter what the policies are. And it's really hard to find time to check the other person's policies because you're usually fending off attacks against the people that you groped and killed. So that's a real problem with candidates. And we should think about that in the future. The Republicans could learn a lesson from that. Make sure, try to take less groping, less murderous candidates. Maybe Chris Bedford, our Washington insider, has some thoughts on this. We'll bring him on next. Our friends at Brick House Nutrition are kicking off a July 4th sale that is worth celebrating. For a limited time, you can take 25% off everything with the code FIREWORKS25. Includes Lean, their best-selling weight loss supplement made with studied natural ingredients. It's helped so many in the audience slim down, and it just works for so many people. There's also Field of Greens. This is the real deal superfood drink made from fruits and vegetables. I know you don't get the fruits and vegetables you need. If you're in this audience, you probably never even seen a fruit or vegetable. But hopefully you're a little healthier than I am. They don't have any gimmicks with this thing. It's just good fruits and vegetables and a drink, and get the things that you need nice and quickly. They even guarantee your doctor will notice the difference or you get your money back. So they stand behind this. Need help with skin and hair? They've got collagen peptides that are a fan favorite. Listeners swear by them. Lots of great stuff there as well. So people love Brick House Nutrition for a reason. And now you get 25% off. Another great reason to love Brick House Nutrition. This is your chance to stock up before the best stuff sells out. So go to BrickHouseNutrition.com, BrickHouseNutrition.com. Use the code FIREWORKS25. Grab the deal now. It's BrickHouseNutrition.com, code FIREWORKS25.
Dein altes Sofa zerfällt langsam. Und die Black-Friday-Angebote sind wirklich unschlagbar. Aber dein Gehalt kommt erst Anfang des Monats. Kein Problem. Mit der PayPal-Bezahlung nach 30 Tagen. So hast du jetzt mehr Spielraum beim Bezahlen und der Betrag wird nach 30 Tagen automatisch und kostenlos von deinem Konto oder deiner Karte abgebucht. Alle Infos auf paypal.de/30 Tage. PayPal es. Vorbehaltlich Kreditwürdigkeitsprüfung verfügbar mit deutschem PayPal-Konto für Einkäufe zwischen 1 und 2.000 Euro.
Joined once again by Chris Bedford, senior editor for politics for Blaze News and Blaze Media Washington correspondent. Be sure to sign up for his newsletter. It's called The Beltway Brief. You can get it at theblaze.com/Bedford. Chris, thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's a lot going on in Washington, as you know, these days. let me get into the big, beautiful bill or whatever they're calling it this day, because I do think it's changed? I don't even know. Maybe you can clarify that. But it did seem to pass the Senate today with a decent amount of drama. And now it is heading back to the House. Is that where we stand at the moment?
That's exactly where we stand. It has passed. The last holdout was Murkowski in Alaska, who, for all of her squishiness, is probably the most openly transactional member of the U.S. Senate. I mean, she says no, and you have to come back and say, okay, what can I give the fisheries in Alaska? What do you need for the natives or this or that? And then she'll say, well, I need this, this, and this. One of them was, I want carve-outs for my state for all of the other things that you did that other senators are upset with. And they actually tried. The parliamentarian said, no, you can't be the only state that doesn't have to deal with this chain crackdown on provider taxes. That doesn't fit with the 51 votes. And then, of course, there were some tougher moments, like when the parliamentarian said, listen, your ideas here to make it so that illegal immigrants are not able to access Medicaid. Something, by the way, which Democrats claim isn't happening at all, but they're apoplectic that this was part of the bill. She said, this is more policy-based than budget-based, and this is something that you're going to have to get 60 votes on, which Republicans came out and voted for, but did not actually succeed because the Democrats weren't going to push that over, unsurprisingly. The spending cuts aren't quite as big as the House of Representatives was hoping for, but they're still very sizable in the history of spending cuts in a bill like this. They spend more and more and more. There are cuts to electric vehicle subsidies. The most important aspect for the Trump administration is there continues to be funding for Customs and Border Patrol and for Immigration and Customs Enforcement to actually be able to enact the president's deportation agenda, which is wildly popular amongst a broader electorate, more broadly than just targeting pinpoint strikes here and there, actually start to get it up to 1990s levels of deportations, which is what one of the goals of this is. There are a lot of different good things, and it's essential for the administration, but it definitely got uglier in the Senate. Basically, everything that goes to the Senate gets worse. The parliamentarian was going to not let them play fast and loose at all and was actually harsher, I think, than most expected. The major tax reforms and the permanent tax cuts are in there. And now that goes to the House of Representatives, which, just like the U.S. Senate, from Ron Johnson on down, is right now talking mean and saying, this ain't going anywhere with us. But the July 4th holiday comes. The president's working the phone lines. The legislative affairs team is down there on another last sleepless week. And the House comes back into session Wednesday morning. And I still think that this train has no brakes. It's going to end up passing by the end of the week, by July 4th.
I'm glad you put it that way, Chris, because that's exactly how I feel about this, too. I feel like a lot of this is just theater, right? You know, I mean, it's no shock that exactly three senators voted against this on the Republican side. Like, if they could have allowed for four, then Murkowski probably would have been out, or maybe she would have come in with something else and somebody else would have dropped out. And now it goes back to the House where, you know, we talked to Chip Roy this morning. He said at current form, it is a no. I believe Chip. I think he'll probably will be a no at the end. But like, he was a yes last time. I think, you know, it's funny just watching this all happen. The bottom line is with this Congress, and correct me if I'm wrong here, Chris, is that Donald Trump says something and he wants it, and he is willing to deal with a little bit of back and forth. He's willing to give things out and play these games with the Murkowskis of the world. But at the end of the day, when he asks for something, basically 99% of these guys are just going to go for it, and they're going to wind up folding, especially with the pressure of needing to go back to their July 4th picnics.
Yeah, those July 4th picnics for us are family affairs, but for them are important campaign stops and fundraising tours. It must be awful to be the family, the kids of some of these politicians dragged from big sweaty event to big sweaty event with a bunch of strangers. But that's exactly it. I mean, the president is decidedly in charge of Washington, D.C. This is not simply a cult of personality like a lot of people on the left want to say. It's a reaction to the fact that he's an excellent deal closer. that he takes a significantly closer interest in legislation than his predecessors in my living memory ever actually did, that he's on the phones, that he's meeting in person, that he's taking these meetings personally. His return of Air Force One might be delayed tonight by a big, big storm that's coming down on the city right now and maybe break some of this heat wave, but he'll be hard at work on this. And it's also, as we saw with Senator Tillis of North Carolina, who's largely been a liberal, pain-in-the-butt Republican looking to make millions and millions of dollars once he leaves the Senate, Donald Trump pushed him out. People are sitting here in Washington wondering, how long was it going to take before somebody just primaries Tillis? He's up again in North Carolina. There's an open opportunity here. He continuously runs against the president. And when he voted against the motion to proceed on the big, beautiful bill, President Trump promised just that. I'll back any primary opponent who I deem credible against Tillis. And within a few hours, Tillis had announced, I'm not running again. I'm done. I can't handle this. I don't want to get beaten at primary. I don't want to deal with that embarrassment. Better to simply go out on top. So that's one senator down. And just like you said, it's not that hard to be three senators, especially someone like Rand Paul, who is always going to be a no, to vote no on this. A lot of that is just self-righteousness. But it's really hard to be that fourth Republican senator who votes no and says, I'm not going to do this. I'm actually going to tank this. That's where you enter beyond showmanship into real power politics. And I don't think you're going to see that in the House of Representatives. There's room for protest votes, but not many. So Thomas Massie's going to be a no, maybe Chip Roy, and they have to kind of play musical chairs at the House Freedom Caucus over who gets to make the stand, as long as the stand doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, that does feel like what it's like. And I will say this, too. Like, I don't know if you've ever made this criticism. I certainly have over the years of, you know, there's this, establishment group in Washington. And they're it's the Republicans, the GOP senators and congressmen. And there's these establishment people that are standing up and they're stopping all this, good stuff we want to do. And like it the more and more I think we go on here, it feels like a dated criticism. I mean, like, look, Donald Trump's not getting everything he wants here. I think if Donald Trump were designing this bill exactly the way he wanted, it would be a little bit different. There are giveaways. There are things in here and there. But like, even when it comes to just this deadline, it's just a date that Donald Trump mentioned, right? Like, it's nothing real about it. It's not like there's a legislative deadline here. It's just, I want it done by this holiday that I know. I mean, Donald Trump is in control of the Republican Party from beginning to end. And like, this criticism of, like, the old Mitch McConnell days, I don't know. It feels like it doesn't even apply anymore.
No, and he's a showman who has a careful eye when he sits down on the set for an interview for where the vases should go and what should be on shot and how his hair looks and how he presents. And he wants to sign this on July 4th. And people in Washington were quick to say, that's just an arbitrary deadline. Well, it's only as arbitrary as the most powerful person in the city and possibly in the world just said that's the deadline.
Right.
I mean, that seems like it's a real deadline. If you're a member of Congress, that's what he wants. And he's going to be mighty displeased if he doesn't get it. And he's got the popular vote as a Republican. And he's got, if you look back at these past 6 months, the series of wins this administration has had with very few setbacks is astounding. Even members of the Beltway press that are typically mouthpieces for liberal leadership, Democratic leadership, are just listing off the whirlwind of successes that this president's had. So it's not like he's a wounded political animal on his way out. It's his triumphant return, and they kind of have to do what he wants on these sorts of things. And you're right, this is not exactly what he would have wanted. It's not exactly what he asked for, but politics is always going to be the art of the possible. And there's the reason why there's not more cuts in the federal government is because the U.S. Senate doesn't want it. The House of Representatives don't want it. Republicans and Democrats alike come together and say, no, we actually kind of like it the way it was done this way. It's very frustrating to someone like Elon Musk, who assumes, listen, I launch and land rockets. I'm the richest person in the world. I bet everyone in Washington just wants to hear my business ideas, my acumen, and push this forward. They're just waiting for me. And it turns out they're actually not. They like the way that they do things. And when you have these slim majorities like we have in this modern partisan era, then these are the cards you're dealt and the realities you have to work with.
Chris, what do we think of the future in the House? I know we kind of both expect something's going to be passed. I wouldn't be completely stunned to see it sent back again to the Senate and a little bit of back and forth. But something's going to get passed eventually. They don't have a ton of room here, obviously, as you mentioned. Do we expect kind of like to go right the same type of thing right to the deadline? It passes by one vote. We get all the theater and all the people, you know, pounding their hands on the tables and then wound up clicking the correct button in the end.
It's like you've got a crystal ball. At least you're looking in the same one that I am, because that's exactly what I see happening. There will be back and forth. There will be grandstanding. There will be mean tweets. But, I mean, look at Senator Ron Johnson, who's one of the more vocal fiscal hawks in the upper chamber. You could write a short book with the number of mean things he said about the big, beautiful bill. But at the end of the day, he voted for it because there was enough in there that he liked. And there was enough pressure on him that you kind of have to move. And it came down to being that fourth vote that would actually tank it. I suspect you're going to see a whole lot of that in the House of Representatives. I mean, at this point, I've been writing about it for weeks. I've just taken a break because I don't know how much Beltway Brief readers need to hear about the random updates of the back and forth. And at the end of the day, it's going to pass.
Chris, what do you think about the bill overall? Is it a good bill? I mean, I definitely see good things in it. I don't think all of the criticisms from the people who have kind of loudly, like Ron Johnson, for example, have come out and said things about the bill, some of which I think are pretty good points. Overall, do you think it's a good bill?
I think it's a great bill. And I think that it hits on a number of, there are big problems with it, like you said, but it hits on the president's campaign promises. And as much as Rand Paul, Ron Johnson, maybe you and me would like to see that the Republicans got elected on a mandate to massively cut and reform the government, that's not really true. That's not what President Trump ran on: entitlement reform, massive deficit cuts. He did run on trying to stabilize the country and its economy, and the spending is really important to that. But his main things, remaking in the future of the country with American immigration reform, ending illegal immigration, deportations of those, especially starting with criminals who are here illegally in the United States. He ran on making the tax cuts permanent. It would have been the biggest tax hike in American history. And if they had gone to the deadline in December, then all those small businesses that are trying to make their calculations this fall on what their business year is going to be like in 2026 would never have been able to make them. So you would get the political hurt without actually getting the economic benefit of passing these sorts of things. It's got no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, the end to some of the subsidies programs that we've seen, a crackdown on a lot of what Joe Biden did in general. All of these things come into President Trump's agenda. But in order to pass something nowadays, it needs to be massive. They don't just vote on single issues like they probably ought to anymore. They're too cowardly to do that. I mean, it defunds Planned Parenthood at the federal level, which the Supreme Court just said in the states is just fine. So these are long-time conservative wins. And not only that, they're the kind of things that have the ability to impact the future of the country, to literally impact the electoral votes of California, which is buoyed by people from other countries. That's a major win that could have future ramifications if Republicans are actually able to turn around after all this and message and all the positives in a way remotely approaching how Stephen Miller in the White House has actually been able to message them.
Ah, a window into how Washington really works with Chris Bedford, senior editor of Politics.
Grimy.
Blaze. It's true, man. It's true. Blaze Media Washington correspondent as well. Sure to sign up for this newsletter. You get all the facts about what's going on from day to day, all the big developments in the Beltway Brief. It's at theblaze.com/Bedford. Chris, I really appreciate you shining some light on all of this.
Thanks so much, Stu. Talk to you soon.
Einsteigen, aufdrehen, losfahren. Mit dem neuen Volkswagen T-Roc bist du bereit für den großen Auftritt. Selbstbewusst und voller Power. Du steigst ein? Keine Kompromisse. Nur du und der Moment. Alles passt. Dein Sound, dein Drive, dein T-Roc. Rockt. Der neue T-Roc.
Another episode of Who Could Have Possibly Seen This Coming? California has rolled back a landmark environmental law. This is the California Environmental Quality Act. And if you know anything about the streets of California, San Francisco in particular, you know the environmental quality is very high if you like stepping in feces. This is a law that they passed a while ago and they now have had to weaken. Why? Because they put all these environmental restrictions, and now they, the bureaucratic hurdles to build a home or any housing is so ridiculous that they don't build anymore. And now it's a real reason why there are nearly 40 million residents that they need housing and a bunch of persistent homelessness. So shocking that an environmental law could go that direction, but it has. The Musk-Trump rivalry is still ongoing. You know, it was flared up, then it calmed down for a while. And now it is Musk is back on the prowl for against this bill. He's saying a saber-rattling Musk promises a new political party if the GOP bill passes. He says the second it's passed, he's starting an American party. Now, again, third party possibility is not usually successful here in the United States. But, you know, they don't usually have a guy, the richest man in the world, behind them either. So we'll see where that goes. There's this exchange as well. Trump is now attacking Musk outwardly once again. Elon Musk knew long before he so strongly endorsed me for president that I was strongly against the EV mandate. It is ridiculous, was always a major part of my campaign. Electric cars are fine, but not everyone should be forced to own one. Elon may get more subsidy than any human being in history, by far. And without subsidies, Elon would probably have to close up shop and head back to South Africa. No more rocket launches, satellites, electric car production, and our country would save a fortune. Perhaps we should have Doge take a good hard look at this. Big money to be saved. Again, you know, kind of threatening Musk. Now, Musk has been pretty consistent that, you know, in a way, he said he doesn't want subsidies, but he also doesn't want them to go to his competition, which would be like oil and gas companies. So he doesn't want fossil fuels to get them either. And those are really just normal tax breaks. There's a lot to this. But anyway, Elon Musk responded, I am literally saying cut it all now. You don't want any of those subsidies. So, like, let's take him up on that, right? Like, again, we're trying to pass this bill, which, of course, as we just discussed, did pass the Senate. There might not be any more opportunities to fix these things. But you can make the bill better by getting rid of those subsidies completely. Musk is saying he doesn't need them. Who's going to be pissed off about it? Probably just the left. So why not do it? I don't know. I would, and I think it should happen. I don't think anybody should be getting subsidies for energy. By the way, speaking of a lot of money going in one particular direction, it is today Bobby Bonilla Day. Yes, one of my favorite stories of all time. Bobby Bonilla, of course, was a pretty big star player back in the late 90s. He had gone to the Mets, and the Mets were looking to get rid of him. They decided to delay payments on his contract because they wanted to go sign somebody else. Now, the problem was this. The owners of the Mets at the time had this really great investment strategy where they're making massive returns, and they thought they would kind of go on forever. The problem was they were investing with Bernie Madoff. So it didn't actually work out all that well in the end. The thought was, hey, we can delay these payments. We'll pay them way out in the future, but this money that we can invest with Bernie Madoff will make all these returns and it'll actually be better for us. Well, that didn't work out all that well. What they decided to do was, this is the year 2000. He only had $5.9 million remaining on his contract, and they decided to instead pay him $1.2 million for 25 years, starting in July of 2011. So that included a negotiated 8% interest rate. So every year until I think it's 2035, he gets a payment of $1.2 million, actually $1.193 million. And today's the day. Imagine that. And he's now in his 60s, still getting checks from his professional baseball career. That's a lucky man. Some would say a luckier man is Tom Brady. Tom Brady seen at the Jeff Bezos wedding with who? Sydney Sweeney. Who, if you don't know who she is, she's some men have found her to be attractive in the past, I am told. I just feel like Tom Brady with his 7 Super Bowls, he was already married to a supermodel, has had all sorts of highly attractive girlfriends over the years. Now he's maybe dating Sydney Sweeney. It's a little much, is it not? You know, I mean, honestly, I think he should be forced to give back at least one particular Super Bowl that I can think of. That should be given to the Philadelphia Eagles. That's just my particular claim. But otherwise, I mean, come on, Tom. Don't you have enough? I mean, you know, it's a little over the top at this point, Tom. Get it under control. Read the room. Okay? Thanks. Fourth of July, not just about fireworks or parades or grilling in the backyard. It's about telling King George to suck it. We didn't want a king. We don't want elites. We don't want power without accountability. That's us. We're the USA. We wanted liberty. We wanted to choose self-rule. We built a republic where people call the shots. That's what Independence Day is really about. It's what Blaze TV stands for as well. This year, we're officially calling it what it is. Let's take over the left's language a little bit and call it No King's Day. Yeah, to celebrate, Blaze TV is doing something that we've never done before. Right now, you can get a free 7-day trial of Blaze TV. That means full access to every show, every series, every documentary, every fearless host on the network. No spin, no censorship. Just the truth. It's the perfect time to support real independent media and kick a little dirt back in the direction of tyranny. So if you've ever thought about joining Blaze TV, check it out. BlazeTV.com/stew, BlazeTV.com/stew. No promo code, just sign up and start watching today. It's BlazeTV.com/stew.